Hi, this is Stan Collymore, and you're listening to the B2 Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host Anthony Kendrick and I'm joined by Shane Lees.
Hello.
And Richard Hero Hudson.
Good evening.
So on this show we're going to talk a bit about England and their future under Sam Allardyce, a bit of other international football, the home nations at the Euros, briefly mention a few other things which has happened on the Euros. But we'll start with England. So I guess the first question I want to ask is, why did we fail at the Euros? Is it fair to completely blame Roy for it all, or was it the players let him down? Or
I personally, I don't buy the whole argument that you put all the blame on one person. It's well known that I was not a fan of Roy Hodgson. I did want him to go quite a lot sooner than he did. But to put it all on Roy Hodgson is harsh. That being said, he completely deserved the sack. There's no question about that. Completely deserved the sack. And that was because he personally showed a real lack of tactical knowledge, which is really quite astonishing for a manager of the history he has, which is of being a tactical manager. He's not a man, he always had the history of being a tactical manager. So it's quite astonishing. I think it kind of showed that his heart maybe wasn't as in it as much as it was when he started. But I think you do put a bit of blame on the players, because at the end of the day, it's 11 players out on the pitch against another 11 players, and if they aren't taking any responsibility, then that is just a mistake. For me, why we didn't succeed is because it's what we've been saying for so long, is we didn't really have an idea about what we were doing. Tactically, we didn't have a manager who was, and like I said, his heart wasn't particularly in it. He didn't really know what he was doing tactically on the international stage. But more than that, if you don't have that, if you don't have an outstanding tactical manager, like, for instance, Portugal had, then what you should have is something to fall back on, which is a team identity, a team philosophy, something that survives from manager from manager from manager. Every single time you've got that, that's the core, and you can fall back on that. We have not had that in a very long time. So I think it's a combination of all three things. The players not performing, the manager not having any real tactical moves when it came to tournament football, and the fact that we didn't actually have a set identity, a set way of playing.
The tactics is something I just want to bring up, because you said a lot the tactics weren't really there. Did it seem, because to me it sort of seemed like the whole team were just doing what they liked. There wasn't really a lot of, there wasn't a plan, there wasn't, they weren't really running at players or having a go at, especially the Iceland game. I completely agree with you on the tactics, and I think, personally, I think that was the main failure of the Euros.
For me, it was the Slovakia game was the sort of the crucial one, where he took out, was it six players?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that just completely took the wheels off the wagon. Grinding out a draw there, and then shuffling players back in, some of, putting the likes of whatever his name is on the left.
Sterling.
just headless. And like the likes of Kane taking the corners and the free kicks every single time until Rooney ends up having to have a word with him. It wasn't Hodgson that told him to stop taking them. It was Rooney.
Well, that for me, I think that was half the problem. I maintain Rooney, the individual, had a very good tournament. But I also say that Rooney, the captain, had a shocking tournament. Because it wasn't just like, if you don't have a strong manager on the sideline, just telling you, tactically, you're going to do this, you're going to do this. You need strong leaders in the team. We didn't have any. I mean, I remember watching a match of the day after the Iceland game, and one of the most poignant points came from Jermaine Genas, of all people, and he said, why aren't the wingers switching over? That's the basic shit you do on Football Manager. It's so simple stuff, but Hodgson was
about it. Overrule the manager.
Well, if a manager's not saying anything, he has to by default. He has to say, we're not getting any strength from the sideline. We're not getting any instructions there. It's not working what we've been told to do. I have to go change some things up. I have to say, right, Sterling, you go on to the right. You've got pace. Let's get some balls in the box. Sorry, you do the same thing. Sorry, maybe you try and come inside a little bit more. Come and play a bit more of a central role. The one thing that was the problem was this combination of all of these things that meant we were just so dire. It was no leaders. It was no real tactical understanding. And I think, Anthony, what you said about everyone was sort of doing their own thing. I've been saying this for so long. England often look like a team that's been sellotaped together. We've just got a bunch of players and gone, right, this is a rough formation, and we're just going to sort of slip everyone in and we'll tie them up with a bit of gaffer tape and hopefully it won't all fall apart within 5 minutes. We went, all right, let's give this a go. Every other team who did well at this tournament came in with at least an idea of what each individual player was going to be doing on that pitch. We didn't even have that.
In regards to like the captains on the pitch responsibility, to compare it to sort of United last year, you've got the likes of both Rooney and Schweinsteiger on the pitch. Schweinsteiger is one of the biggest leaders captains going on a pitch, and they were still playing under LVG and running around like headless chickens doing this exactly the same, because it was just drilled into them that they had to play a certain way. And it seemed that they were playing exactly the same way for England as United did, just constantly pass the ball around at the back and never actually penetrate.
But surely...
Yeah, I don't actually think Rooney's the worst captain, and it's the same point. Even a captain needs good leadership, and he needs that from the manager. So I don't think it's necessarily the fact that Rooney was the worst captain, but it was just, I think, because he's captain, as a manager, not really going out and being a strong leader. I don't think he felt confident enough to go out and be that strong leader on the pitch. And because of that, because you had so few senior players in that team, I mean, who else was it going to be? And you have Gary Cahill, you look at that, what was it, the second Iceland goal? It was just, there was just no communication in that back line. And there's another example that there's no real leaders on the pitch, and there's no one giving them the confidence to go out there and be leaders. That's what good managers do. They give the players the confidence to assert themselves properly on that pitch. So I think, yeah, there's a lot to blame for Hodgson, but it comes down to a whole lot of things, not just one thing.
I just want to go back to saying the players being drilled in a way of playing and that. Isn't that good management, though, to have players... You're saying managers play a certain way. If you've got your captain coming out and, you know, almost overruling what the manager's saying and saying, I think we should do this, then surely that's chaos.
Well, no, because if the problem with England wasn't the problem with Manchester United. The problem with Man United was that they were too well-drilled and then they didn't have a plan B. The problem with England was they didn't have a plan A. We didn't have any visual interest in the first. And that in that instance, if you are a player on the pitch, it's almost like Sunday League stuff. If you know the guy at the side of the pitch is totally bullshit, you have to turn around and go, no, if I'm the leader of this team, I'm going to have to turn around and say, maybe we've got to try something different. Maybe we've got to do something just a little bit different. You're not actually directly challenging the manager. You're just saying, right, you're not giving me the instructions on the sidelines. It's got to be me doing it, because what we're doing is not working.
All right. I'll move forward as well. Look at the next manager. Sam Allardyce has come in. Just before he was appointed, I've got a poll on Twitter. I think you might be interested in this. So I asked people who we want as the next England manager, and most people said they wanted a foreigner in rather than... And I named the English option. Sam Allardyce was the most popular in English, but the most popular overall option was people wanted a foreigner in. So, yeah, what do we make of Sam Allardyce, and would he have been your pick?
I think it shows that... Like, you look at in the Premier League now, that some of the quality of managers that are in the Premier League, and now then you look at now what we've got as an England manager. You know, what was the guy that was at Sunderland?
Yeah.
That's the depth we've now come to.
I do agree with what you're saying. Personally, I'm pleased with Sam Allardyce, because I don't believe you should ever have a foreign manager, and I would say about the Germans, about the Spanish, all of them. They should, the England job has to be an English manager, just the same as the England physio has to be an English physio. Because... And the problem, I think, what you just sort of pointed out, Richard, is that we don't have English managers at the top clubs. But they're not going to get the jobs at the top clubs because they're English. Because they can't actually do really anything. Unless you're a manager who's in charge of, say, Leicester, and you manage to do a miracle season, you will not get the big jobs because you're English. The big clubs will just go straight away for the foreign managers who have already won things in foreign leagues. Because, again, the English managers are not going to get the jobs in the foreign leagues. And so they say, look, I've won things. The English managers can never do it because they never put up the clubs that are going to win things. It's a circular problem where we can never really solve it until one club just takes a bit of impetus to go and do it. And so as much as we can say, yes, Sam Allardyce is not obviously the best manager in the world, he's probably not even in the top 20, he is still, I think, the best Englishman we had, and for me, the job had to go to an Englishman.
I think, I agree with you, he's definitely the best English choice, but I think if there was a better foreign option we could have got, then we definitely should have gone for him, I think. You know, it's easy to say I don't want a foreign manager, but if a foreign manager comes and gets us to a final of a Euros or a World Cup or something, then, you know, he's amazing. He's the man, I think.
For me, it's not about not having a foreign manager as much as it is about having an English manager. As I've said, the English managers will not get the opportunity to go and manage Man United. They will not get the opportunity to manage Chelsea, any of those clubs. They will, you know, if Sam Allardyce was called Samuele Aladici, he would have got a Chelsea manager. He would have got some job like that because he would have been a foreign manager and we'd have said, oh, look at him, he plays proper Italian football. we would have said things like that. If you're, let's say, Nicky Butt, Michael Carrick, one of these, you know, young, older players, younger coaches, younger managers maybe, and you're coming through and you're thinking, what is the highest post I can reach as an English manager? You have to say it's England, because if it's not, it's going to be what? Sunderland? Aston Villa maybe? That's the highest you can reach. Are you really going to bother? You've made your millions, you're rich for life. Are you really going to bother going into it? Because you know you will not aspire to much. You know you can't reach that. We have to have the English post available to the English managers. Otherwise, I just think the problem we have at the moment, which we're all saying, is we have a dearth of English talent in the coaching and management board, will only get worse because there's even less to get in, like, enticing into that role.
For me, I harks back to the way that the coaching setup is in this country. The avenues to get into coaching is just few and far between. The number of top level coaches that are English compared to both German and Spanish, I think it's a tenth of. It costs 10 times as much in this country to become a coach as it does in either of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to get the number of coaches coming through if those barriers are there.
I agree completely, but the problem is, as much as you can say, okay, so maybe we have to go to a front manager, that just makes that problem worse, and it makes it even less likely in the future we'll have a good England manager. So.
No, I think if a manager came along and showed that they'd actually got the talent to manage, they'd be given a chance in the Premier League. I just don't think there's been one that shines out as being like that.
Here's a counterpoint. Eddie Howe is probably the most promising young England manager at the moment. How many years and how much success would he have to have one of these small clubs, which he could realistically attain, to go and get a job at a licensed city and all that long?
I think he's got to, if he keeps Bournemouth in the Premier League again, you know, that's excellent. He needs to get a job at, you know,
English mentality to not go and try managing else overseas.
Yeah, but I think, going back to Eddie Howe, I think you've got to take sort of a mid-table job. I think David Moyes is a good example at Everton. You know, you take a mid-table Premier League job, Pochettino at Spurs, someone like that. I think you've got to do a decent job at a mid-table club and then you get the opportunity at a big club for me.
No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. Pochettino got his job because he's Argentinian and he's fancy. He managed in Espanyol when we at Southampton like foreign and fancy. And Tottenham like foreign and fancy. David Moyes got a job because he was friends with Sir Alex Ferguson. And he was a Scot. And he was part of being... You know, we can say David Moyes got a job for Man United for various reasons. He got a job because he was a personal friend of Sir Alex Ferguson.
That definitely played a role.
For a long time. Go and get that job.
If you do a decent...
If you're anyhow, it's the same situation as Sam Allardyce. You can have 20 years in the Premier League. You will not win anything at one of these smaller clubs. At best, you're going to get an FA Cup or a League Cup. And you can have 20 years of saving clubs from relegation, you have 20 years of achieving every single target. You will not get one of those big jobs. Because the second one of those jobs comes available, they're going to go to the likes of Diego Simeone. They're going to go to the likes of Antonio Conte. You can say, yeah, I'm foreign, so you can sort of rely on me more, because I'm less of a risk, that means. And look, I've won loads of things because I've been managing foreign leagues. And the foreign leagues aren't going to hire English managers because, well, let's face it, a lot of these foreign places do not like us at all.
Oh,
they
I love
trust English football.
They don't bother to learn any languages.
No, of course. Yeah. It's a circular problem. We're not learning, and then they look at our English football and go, oh, well, that's not going to work over here, so we can't hire them. Yeah, there's lots of different reasons for it why we don't get the foreign jobs. But at the moment, we're not going to get the big jobs, and therefore we're not going to have the opportunity to prove ourselves as being winners. Therefore, you have to keep some high position available to England managers to go and get. And I think that is
the... I'll just ask you...
I think it's part of the English mentality of both players. Well, just the English mentality as a whole, though, that we just don't go overseas. We don't bother to learn other nationalities, languages, and we don't go overseas to play our trade. Now, what English players play abroad at the moment?
That's, you can count them on 2 hands, can't you?
Yeah, and it's always been that case. What English managers ever go abroad?
Only the best, intensively.
Paul Clement is the assistant at Bayern, and he's not come back to work with the England setup.
So Bobby Robson, he obviously went abroad, that was quite a few years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, Terry Venables, but it's few and far between.
Gary Neville and David Moyes in the Spanish League last season.
Yeah, but Gary Neville, abysmally, he took the risk and it just didn't work out at all. But even if you're looking at the other managers like Terry Venables and Sir Bobby Robson, look at managers who were successful in a time where you could be successful as an English manager. These days, it is a dirty word. In Premier League, those big clubs, they will not hire you. Half of that fact that you are an Englishman, they'll say, no, we want an English manager, we want someone from this country. But they won't ever put their money where their mouth is, because they'll rather take the security of hiring someone who's won 5 trophies already.
Well, of course. If you're head of recruitment at Chelsea, you're deciding who's going to be Chelsea manager this season. Do you pick someone like Conte, or do you pick Eddie Howe?
No, I'm not pointing a floor in what they're doing. I'm saying that because of this, we have to make sure that there is still some incentive for young managers coming through. And that is that the England post, which is a job every English manager will ever want, it doesn't matter how old they are, it doesn't matter how good they are, they're going to all want that job. If we start saying that job's for foreigners too, if we give it to 2-3 foreign managers in a row, suddenly I just think a lot of these guys are just not going to bother. They're already, well, they've already you know, being in the game they love, are they really going to say, yeah, I really want to be manager of Sunderland, that's the highest of my ambitions? They're not. They're not going to want to get into it. The coaching board is already tiny.
Mm-hmm.
The management board is already just some sort. It's going to get smaller still.
All right, I think we'll move on from England. I just want to mention the other underachievers, another Twitter poll I did. I asked people who they thought the biggest underachiever of Euro 2016 was, and unsurprisingly, England got 71% of the vote. But the others... The other finalist in this little thing was Ukraine. Your tip to be a dark horse at the Euro, Shane?
Yeah, I got that.
But Spain were also underachievers. I just want to mention them. Del Bosque is gone, as was expected after this tournament, and they brought in a former Porto boss, Lopetegui, Josep Lopetegui. I think that's the right pronunciation. He used to work with the Spain under 21s, under 19 sides. He won the under 21s, the Euros, the under 21 Euros as well. So, you know, maybe that's good for the future. But he did fail at Porto, so it'd be interesting to see how he gets on in Spain.
Well, yeah, I mean, like a lot of people are saying, the Spanish, you know, the whole thing was the death of Tiki Taka and all of that lot. Personally, I think it was more just passing of a golden generation and trying to play the exact same way as they have before without necessarily having players where they can do that with women. I think it's literally just an awkward transition period. I don't think, you know, the Spanish way of playing will necessarily die. I mean, it will change a little bit, just as all philosophies and all, you know, approaches to football do. But I think it's literally just, for me, an awkward transitional period that they're stuck in. Just past the golden era, with some very good, you know, young players coming through, not quite the most middling players, you know, 25, 26-year-old players who are, you know, outstanding.
So do you think Spain will have a bad tournament or two, maybe, and then come back, you know, 5 years' time, something like that, be a, you know, the big player again?
Yeah, I think with Spain, especially with that country, it's always about cycles. They go through some good years and they go through some bad years, and it sort of goes every sort of 10, 20 years. It goes through one or two generations.
And they don't have a dodgy load of blood to rely on.
All right, we'll move on to the other home nations then. We've talked about England, but I guess we have to talk about Wales after reaching the semi-finals, I should say. Fantastic tournament for them.
Unquestionably. I mean, I got kind of I know I said Ukraine, and I'm going to take full responsibility for absolutely, you know, messing that one up. But I got laughed at on this. I think remember when I said Wales can go and do well, I said I thought they might go and reach the semi-finals. Yes, it's a fantastic achievement for them. Some people have been downplaying it because of the way they got there. In fact, it wasn't necessarily the most convincing, but a tournament football, it's simply that. And they did outstandingly well. I don't necessarily agree that they've got this massively bright future. So I think the problem with Wales is they've got a golden generation at the moment, but you look at the future generations they were coming through, and you think, I'm not so sure if there's, you know, that many outstanding players coming through this. I mean, how many players that we could we name under the age of 21 Welsh that we think could go on to be world beaters? Even when Gareth Bale was talking about, people knew who he was. People knew he had potential. So, yeah, I do think that maybe it was more like a flash in the pan with Wales. I don't think they necessarily have the best future. But at the same time, I know plenty of Welsh people. I lived there for 3 years. They don't really care. They just love the experience of going to Euros, performing well, outperforming England, outperforming all the other home nations. And so I don't think they'll mind too much.
Chris Coleman obviously deserves a lot of credit. He says he's going to leave after the next World Cup campaign, whether they qualify or whatever happens. How much of a loss is that to Wales? I guess he deserves tremendous credit for what he's done.
Personally, I think as much as you can praise Chris Coleman, he was, what I'd say, he's a manager of fortune. Essentially, he's coming at a very good time for the Welsh national team, and he has kept the momentum going. Now, that is a difficult achievement in itself, to which you have to keep momentum going to maintain the status quo you've got within the squad. That is an achievement. But I'll put it this way, if he went and got a big job, if he went and got a job, say, like Liverpool, let's say, you know, Jurgen Klopp ends up getting sacked at the end of this year, and he for some reason, ends up getting that Liverpool job, I wouldn't expect massive things.
No.
He didn't pull trees in his club career, did he?
No, I think he's a manager who came in at a very convenient time and kept up the good times. But I think there's a lot of managers who can go and do that.
Well, Hull have tried to get Coleman, and they've had their approach blocked by the Welsh Football Association. So
I don't think he would have taken that job. I think he would have thought, after what he's done, he could get a better job than that.
Hull's like a bigger shithole than Wales.
That's nice. I like it.
Just want to mention Northern Ireland and Republic of Ireland both got out of the group stages. Fantastic achievements for those as well.
Yeah, that's another one where I have to say I messed up. I said I didn't think they'd get a point between them. But they did well. I mean, Republic of Ireland, we have to remember they're about 2 minutes away from going out in the group stages with 1 point. So, I mean, they did okay. I don't think they, you know, did anything amazing. I think their fans would have enjoyed the trip. But, you know, I think when you're a fan of a smaller national team and a national team that isn't expected to do anything, you are just there to enjoy the occasion. So I don't think they'll have any complaints. Northern Ireland did do fantastically well. Mm-hmm. They were in a very tough group. And to actually come out of it in the way they did, it was outstanding. So I think, you know, for instance, if we're saying Chris Coleman deserves credit for what he does, but maybe not a claim, I'd say Michael O'Neill, he does deserve massive acclaim. Because to do that is the equivalent of a Leicester. They may not have won it, but that is the equivalent. Because for a country the size of Northern Ireland, their population, their talent pool, with the players they even took to the tournament, to even get there in the first place, and then to do as well as they did, that is a fantastic achievement.
For me, the biggest achievement, and to our followers as well, Iceland were the biggest overachievers at the Euros.
I thought the supporters were just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really say enough good things about Iceland. But I'm going to say this now because everyone keeps making this mistake. Everyone's like ripping on people for stealing their their clap chart, but everyone forgets that they actually stole it from some Scottish team. I can't remember which Scottish team it was, but some Scottish team started that. Iceland club fans then started doing it when they went to play them, and then it ended up being national. It's not some Norse thunder god summoning super chant, it's just a generic football chant. But no, genuinely, yeah, that's it, Motherwell. And I think with Iceland, you know, just what I was saying about Northern Ireland, with such a small talent pool, for them to go and do what they did, Iceland is ridiculous. It's fully ridiculous. Think about how many great footballing countries there are in the world. How low would you rank Iceland among them? And then for them to go and do what they did, it's just stupid. It's the kind of thing you can't even do on a football management game. You can't do that on feet. You can't do that on football management. You will fail before you get to that.
That is 100 saves before the game, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. It's saves coming to the maximum point to where you take over the other national team to just make them play really badly. It's ridiculous. That's how big it is. So, full credit to them. Again, I don't know how much of a future they have in it because I can't think of that many outstanding young Iceland talents. But again, for a nation of that size, it's all about going to the tournament. It's not like for an England fan where you're not just happy to go there. You want to achieve something. For them, it's going there, it's experiencing it, it's playing against the big teams because you're not always going to get an opportunity. They might not qualify for the next tournament. In fact, you'd probably say that more than likely they would qualify for the next tournament. So it's about enjoying it as much as you can. And of course, you want those Iceland fans. They loved every bloody moment of it.
Well, this brings me on quite nicely to a point I want to make, the tournament format, because it was increased from 16 to 24 teams, which has enabled teams like Northern Ireland, like Iceland and others to be a part of a Euros where, you know, they've maybe not been a part of it for a while, a part of something like, you know, a major tournament. I guess it's better that there's more teams involved. Obviously, that's undeniable. But I know John Watson.
I think it's a mixed bag.
Well,
I think it's a mixed bag because you've got a few teams like Iceland, etc., getting through. But as a whole, it was a pretty dire tournament.
Well, Joachim Löw, the Germany manager, had a go. He criticised the tournament after it finished and said that it should revert back to 16 teams. John Motson also criticised the tournament format on the BBC.
I personally think that the expanded tournament was justified because I think we saw that the smaller teams, even the teams like Romania and Albania, they justified their presence there. But the specific format itself was not. I think three teams going through in groups of four was ridiculous. It was always going to mean the group stages were three dull games. Because every team went into a game, got to win one, and that's it. We could maybe even get away with drawing two.
So no team went into it. Look at Portugal drew three games.
I mean, you didn't have any impetus to go out and say, right, we've got to win. Or you get into a second game and go, right, we've got to win. It was always, okay, we could leave this to the third game and still get through. I think that what it meant was that by the time you actually reach the knockout stages, when things do get tense, when things get a bit nervy, you get the nil-nils and the one-alls, I think by that point there was absolutely no momentum. There was no momentum for any teams. Even the big juggernaut teams had no momentum. And so it just sort of kept on that dull thing. I think an expanded tournament is justified, and I think it should be stuck. What I think we should do is have 20 teams, four groups of five, do it World Cup-style rugby, and have two teams go through. Because I think we're justified having more teams in. I think we've shown that the likes of Romania and Iceland, they can hold their own. They are good enough to be there. They can even upset the big boys. And that's fully justified. What's not justified is the terrible format it was in. So I think you keep more teams in, a bit less than what we had this time. But you do have to change that format for what it is, because it was just dire.
I think there's...
You can have four groups of six and just keep on going through a fair while.
I was going to say, wouldn't it, yeah. Well, four groups of five was Shane's suggestion, but I guess you'd have one knockout round less, so it would cancel out.
Yeah, because you'd still have, because I mean, normally it's four groups of four, isn't it? And you have two teams going through. So four groups of five with two teams going through, you skip out the round of, what was it, 16?
Yeah, 16.
That was thrown in the middle. Yeah, I think you stick to the traditional format, but just one group in each.
It would work, yeah. I guess there's two problems with what happened at the Euros, though. One was teams didn't know if they were through or not. Like, Albania believed they'd done enough in Group A, and then the later results showed they were out. And then the other thing is the way it all just worked out, just by coincidence, all the big teams, you had an easy side of the draw and a difficult side of the draw where Italy, Germany, Spain, you know, I guess that was just, that's just unlucky. But yeah, for me, that's something that's got to be addressed.
Yeah, I mean, but the side's from the easy side, won't it?
Well, yeah.
I mean, like, a lot of people said they don't think the you know, the format has actually thought particularly much about what they were doing. I think it's the opposite problem. I think they thought far too much about the format of the group stages and all that lot, and ended up somehow in their heads justifying that this will all work and be a really entertaining tournament. I just don't think it was ever really going to be a great tournament, not when you have a group stage where, how many teams even went out in the group stage?
So eight. Six, yes. No, eight. Yeah. Eight. So 24 teams and two teams that finished third in the groups went out. Eight teams.
Yeah, I mean, when you have a group stage where the majority of teams will go through, you're not going to have the same impetus yet. You're not going to have the same enthusiasm for every single game. I think you do it the opposite way around. You still have bigger groups, which is, I mean, groups of five, but you have more teams going out that are going to go through, because then somebody is on the list. Teams have to go for every single game.
I like your principle. I do like the principle of it. Just one final thing, then we'll go on to Portugal, who obviously won the tournament. Is Ronaldo someone we can now consider a great? Is he well, I guess we could always consider him a great, but is he one of them top players?
Has he now surpassed Messi?
Well, that was what I was going to, yeah, come on to. Is he?
I'm on this podcast with two Man United fans, so I imagine I know which way you're all going to go. Personally, yeah, I do think yes, you know. I think... If Messi's done what he's done for Barcelona, he's been outstanding doing it. Ronaldo has done it for Man United, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and at the time, the biggest club in England. He's done it for Real Madrid, one of the biggest clubs in the world, and for a lot of his career, the biggest club in Spain. And now he's done it for Portugal, who were not even really close to being the biggest team in Europe. And you have to give credit to the rest of the team and all that lot, but at the end of the day, who was it who pulled their asses out of the fire when they looked like it? But it was Ronaldo. I think, yes, he goes down as one of the greatest of all time. And you have this kind of record at every level you've played, without exception. You have to go down as one of the greatest of all time.
For me, what impressed, I don't think actually on the pitch he had a great tournament. He had one particularly good match where he did like the backheel goal and such. But apart from that, he wasn't great. But what impressed me, though, was his attitude off the pitch.
Well, it was like a manager towards the end of the final. He was going crazy.
The game already had penalties, and he was just so kind of build up for Moutinho to take a penalty.
Mm. It, remember what I was saying about Rooney earlier? He had a good tournament on the pitch, but a poor tournament as a captain. Ronaldo's like the polar opposite. Ronaldo had a decent tournament on the pitch, some off games, some good games. But as a captain, as a leader, he was everything you would have wanted from a captain leader. And I know people sort of criticise Ronaldo's sort of personality. If they're going to criticise him, they say, oh, he's arrogant and all that long. I'm sorry, but you look at how he is on the pitch, and that tournament, you realise why he was the great player he was. Because you cannot be a great player without that kind of mentality. Yeah.
The whole thing with, as well, when he went down in the final, the moth tried to eat his face. then there's, yeah, you get the Twitter abuse of like, oh, he's a crybaby and all this. He went back on that pitch for 10 minutes with a muscle torn off his leg.
Yeah.
And he was still trying to, you know, take part. Most players nowadays, they tear a muscle on their leg. They're not getting up.
No.
Yeah, I think if you're still trying to knock Ronaldo and say he's not one of the best in the world, either now or in of all time, I think you're not being objective. I think you're probably someone who is very much a fan of Messi and you just really don't like Ronaldo. If you're being objective, you look at his record, you compare it to the greats, and you look at how he has consistently done it. Wherever he's gone at any level, you have to say he is one of the best of all time.
I think he's one of the most complete forwards of all time, most certainly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because he has every single thing in his locker.
Just one final question I want to ask. What was your personal highlight of the Euros?
When it ended.
Oh, all right. That's a great way to end the show.
It was not a great tournament.
Was there a particular goal or a game or a team or anything that made you happy?
Hungary v Portugal was great to watch. That was a game I enjoyed watching.
The Robson Cano goal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was great fun to watch. I enjoyed watching Wales. I enjoyed watching Northern Ireland. I managed to watch the majority of the games in the Euros. For me, the Hungary-Portugal game was a good one. I was down the pub with friends watching it, so it's obviously, you know, good fun when you get all those goals. That was a good game. I wouldn't say it's not a tournament that's going to live long in the memory. It won't live long in my memory. And when I'm looking back to sort of tournaments I really enjoyed watching, this will not be one of them. I enjoyed Brazil. I really enjoyed Brazil tournament, even though we were terrible. I enjoyed, you know, watching Mexico. I enjoyed watching the Netherlands. That was a good tournament. I'll remember that one. It's the same for me as the South African World Cup. But it's not really a lot to actually go and remember.
The Brazil semi-final, not because they got absolutely but just how they came out at the beginning of the game thinking that Neymar had died.
Yeah. My favourite moment was when the Italians out national anthem the Brazilians. So you cannot do it better than the Italians. We're thinking of best moments this tournament. We're just going to fucking go back a few years.
For me, this tournament was about the emergence of quite a few sort of young players starting to come through. That was just my personal highlight. The likes of Renato Sanchez, yeah. Who I think he looks like a worldie already.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua Kimmich, I thought, was particularly good.
We're both. Sorry,
go on.
No, it's all right, guys.
Just these players that are going to be the next generation. There's a few of them now that are starting to now make the mark. And when it was a tournament in which a lot of the big name players went completely missing.
Uh-huh. Is there any just final question? Is there any argument with Griezmann winning player of the tournament? For me, there isn't. Would either of you?
No, not at all. I'll put it this way: if France had won the tournament and it was such a close final game, there'd have been absolutely no questions about it. I think the only questions are: do you give the tournament to a player who didn't win the tournament? I mean, there's enough precedent for going ahead and doing that. And I think if you look at who was the standout player of that tournament, it was Griezmann.
Yeah.
Well, Leo Messi won the World Cup player of the tournament last time out, if I remember rightly.
Oh, but that was political. Everyone knew that was political.
I thought he was the best player.
Bollocks was even best player. That was for me, there's no question about Griezmann. Maybe say Ronaldo had to push, but I don't think he was that good on the pitch. Messi was a political appointment.
Yeah.
In the World Cup, that was, this has been not the most amazing tournament in the world. We've had protests and everything. Let's make football look really good. Lionel Messi, the player everyone knows. He's the best player of the tournament.
Alright, well, thanks for joining me. Is there anything else you want to mention before we go?
Big up the Sam Allardyce era.
Big up Sam Allardyce. On that note, we'll end the show. Thanks for joining me tonight. You can also check out our new website, v2football.com. Follow us on Twitter as well. It's goodnight from me and goodnight from Shane and Richard.